speech to free minds. It's the David Knight Show.
Welcome on this Wednesday, February the 27th, 2019. I'm David Knight, your host. Well, today we've had India and Pakistan exchanging gunfire over airplanes. India says it shot down one Pakistani warplane and in the process lost a MiG-21 fighter. We have President Trump in North Korea. And we also have, which nobody in the mainstream media has talked about for the last couple of days, a vote to kill babies after birth by Democrats. And yet, what are we talking about? And headlines in the mainstream media. Well, we've got a disbarred, convicted perjurer is going to have press conferences for the next 3 days to slander President Trump. That's the big title at CNN. That's their feature. None of this other stuff is really important. You know, Trump in North Korea, Democrats say we can kill babies after birth, and unrest in another part of the world. That's not going to be talked about because, you know, President Trump is a tyrant because he wants to protect the border. And so that's the other thing that's being talked about. Besides Cohen, they're talking about the fact that the Democrats have voted to overrule for the first time since it was created back in the 1970s. They have voted to overrule a president declaring a national emergency for anything. You know, you could declare him a national emergency for a natural disaster. You don't even have to have it if you want to go to war for regime change in some other part of the world. Don't have to have it. Not a problem. They didn't really care about building a dozen military bases and four airfields in Syria and putting thousands of troops there without any authorization by the Congress. They didn't care about that. They don't care if President Trump is going to go to Venezuela as well. They didn't care about Yemen. They don't care about anything other than protecting this border. Can't do that. And we have to slander President Trump. Even people on the left who are not part of the military-industrial complex worshiping Democrats, the centrist Democrats, the adult Democrats. You know, you got two sets of Democrats. You got the ones who want war with everybody, like Madeleine Albright and the Clintons. When asked if their sanctions that killed over 500,000 kids, more than died in Hiroshima, they said, do you think that was worth it? Oh, yeah, it was worth it. Not even the decency to deny it, said Madeleine Albright. So we've got those types of Democrats. And now we've got a new type of Democrat that's been introduced to us by Bernie Sanders and occasional Cortex. And most of the people who are running for office have become this type of Democrat, and that's just the hardcore socialist. You know, there's at least two dozen different people that have indicated they're going to run for president on the Democrat side, more so than we had Republicans last time. And it has turned into a free-for-all. And by that, I mean everything free. They're not just it's not just a brawl between these people. They want everything for free. And you know, all things are free, and they're free to everybody. Free for all for free. That should be the new motto of the Democrat Party. So we're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about the hypocrisy of the born alive, which is actually dead on arrival. That's really what we ought to call this bill. Yeah, the Republicans put up a bill, protect babies born alive. And Democrats said, no, you're dead on arrival. And I think their party is going to be dead on arrival. We got more examples of censorship that they don't want to call out as well. We'll talk about what happened. Actually, Jorge Ramos got deported yesterday. He got deported. He got deplatformed, and he got deported. I mean, how's that for irony? they can't quite bring themselves to criticize that because they love this guy's communist policies, that side of the Democrat Party. So stay with us. We'll be right back.
Deceit. telling the truth is a revolutionary act. And now, the David Knight Show.
Welcome on this Wednesday, February the 27th, 2018. We have liberal Democrats who don't want war. That's this tiny little minority that's left of the old left. As I said at the top of the hour, you got the Democrats who want war everywhere. They don't care. They don't want to have any confrontations at our border. But anywhere else, that's fine. We can starve 500,000 kids. Don't worry about separating those kids from their parents. Madeleine Albright and the Democrats did. They don't really care whether we go to war in Venezuela. They don't care about Yemen. They don't care about Syria. Yeah, presidents can do anything they want, but they're going to shut down the president's national emergency order at the border, they think. We'll talk about that. They're not going to be able to do anything. It's just grandstanding. And as President Trump is in North Korea, you've got some Democrats, some people on the left saying, why are Democrats trying to torpedo the Korean peace talks? Gee, I don't understand. I thought we wanted peace. No, not this Democrat Party. This Democrat Party doesn't want peace. They want war with anybody that has won an election. Since they've lost so many, in the wake of Obama, they want to claw their way back. We're going to talk about the attacks coming from the left on guns. Today there is a big vote in the House to try to set up background checks in areas where they didn't have background checks before. For gun shows, for online sales, and so forth. It's going to require a national registry. They want to allay fears and say, oh, there's nothing in there that creates a national registry. Well, it's implied. It's implied. You're going to have to do that. It's kind of like what Nancy Pelosi said. We're going to have to pass Obamacare to find out what's in it. And what she really meant by that, I mean, it wasn't a moment of senility. She has those moments, but that was not one of them. Actually, that was a moment of candor. They hadn't read the bill, first of all. They don't need to read the bill. They create these bureaucracies or hand the power over to the bureaucracies after they pass this legislation. We've seen this pattern for a very long time. It began with the IRS. Now they do it with virtually every bureaucracy, virtually every bill. What they do is they say, well, you know, we want you to collect taxes and, you know, we've written some vague guidelines here, but we're going to let you put the devil in the details here at the IRS. And now they do that everywhere. And so when she said, well, we're going to have to pass it to find out what's in it, we're going to shift it over to the bureaucracy, they will fill in the details. Just as the monster that Elizabeth Warren helped to create, the Consumer Protection, Consumer Finance Protection Board, something like that, it is noble in its intent, just like we all want to have a clean environment. But let's look at and see what these different bureaucracies do, like the EPA and the Consumer Protection Bureau for finances. Yeah. Take a look at what these things do, and you realize that once they pass this law background check, then it'll pass over to the ATF or Department of Justice or whatever. They will decide then how it's going to be implemented. And they'll say, well, you know, we're just going to have to put in rules, which don't have to be voted on by the Congress, rules for which you don't have any recourse except to try to sue them. There's no presumption. If they pass a rule that says we can confiscate your property without even charging you with a crime, and you have the Department of Justice start pushing civil asset forfeiture, then your only recourse, since you it's not a law, they say it's a rule. You know, Pelosi didn't pass it, didn't sign it. She just shipped it over to the bureaucracy to fill in the details. And so you don't have any presumption of innocence. You don't have to be convicted before they take your stuff. And when they take your stuff, it can be excessive. Now, we've just had the Supreme Court push back against that last bit a little bit. I don't know. They said a local jurisdiction and state cannot have excessive fines, but they didn't really directly attack civil asset forfeiture because they didn't go after the process where the federal government has worked to turn local law enforcement into highway robbers and thieves. They didn't say you can't take this stuff without charging people the crime. Unless you do that, then as the old saying goes, we've already established what you are. We're just haggling over the price. Oh, that's excessive. Can't do that. nevertheless, that they don't want you to focus on what's really going to happen with the gun control bill today. We're going to talk a little bit more about that. But the curtain is really going to be on 3 days of theatrics with Michael Cohen, a former lawyer and representative for the president, now a convicted liar. He's committed perjury at least twice in talking to Congress. He's been disbarred. But they're so excited. It's all the headlines everywhere. CNN is excited. He's tipped off New York Times that he's going to come out. This perjurer, this disbarred lawyer is going to come out and call President Trump a racist, a con man, a cheat. This is a guy who cheated the president. He admitted he cheated the president. He fills out invoices for the president. And he fills out invoices for these other guys, and he keeps most of the money for himself. So the people who thought they're going to get paid get ripped off. They think it's President Trump. It's actually Cohen who is embezzling the money out of the situation. So now this guy is going to go for 3 days. That's all you're going to hear about. And with good reason. They don't want people talking about the fact that they just turned down any protections for babies that are born alive. Democrats don't want you talking about that. The Republicans came up, as I said, with a Babies Born Alive Protection Act. A Democrat said, that is dead on arrival. You know, the protection of babies is dead on arrival after birth. We're not going to do that. And basically, the babies are, as far as they're concerned, dead on arrival as well. The other thing that they are pushing right now, the national news media, is the fact that the Democrats, led by Nancy Pelosi, are saying, we're going to terminate the president's national emergency declaration. The Democrat-controlled House voted 245 to 182. It's all the Democrats. Voted to revoke President Trump's declaration of a national emergency at the U.S. border. This is the first time this has been done, by the way, since they passed the National Emergencies Act of 1976. And this was done yesterday. And of course, with 245 votes, they don't have what's needed to override a presidential veto. Even if they get the votes in the Senate, they may put it up for votes in the Senate. If it goes to President Trump's desk, he can veto it, and they don't have the votes to overturn it. They're 40 votes short of overturning a presidential veto. So this is just more posturing by the do-nothing Democrats who want to obstruct and bring down the country until they can establish their socialist utopia. But when they talk about the fact that this is the first time the Senate or House has tried to terminate a presidential declaration of a national emergency, that's true. Think about the different national emergencies and treaties that we've had that President Obama signed. No problem. You know, climate treaty. He signed, self-ratified the climate treaty, which, of course, is not constitutional. And you have Nancy Pelosi out there saying, you have to decide, do you want to side with Trump or the Constitution? Make that decision. Well, it's a phony choice. It's absolutely a phony choice, just like what George W. said. You're either with us or you're with the terrorist. You either support a Patriot Act or you might be a terrorist. Well, you know, when you got two choices like that, actually works out to four, got two parameters, you actually wind up with four choices. It isn't a choice of Trump or the Constitution. Of course, you could also, the other combinations would be you support Trump and the Constitution. That's my position on this particular issue. And or you could say, I don't support Trump and I don't support the Constitution. That's where Nancy Pelosi is. Now, they had absolutely nothing to say when Obama not only violated the Constitution by self-ratifying the Iran Treaty and the climate treaty. Well, you know, that climate treaty, that's an emergency, right? It's implied. But of course, he self-ratified the treaty. President Trump unself-ratified that. Same thing with the Iranian deal. That was emergency, too. I mean, we had a ransom to pay. We had to fill planes with foreign currency. think about that. Filled them with foreign currency because there was a law prohibiting him from giving them American dollars. That's his respect for the rule of law and the Constitution. Just like when it came to Obamacare. He decided that he would fund that by stealing the money. A net asset sweep, of course, they called it. But he would steal the money for the Obamacare subsidies that were not appropriated by Congress, that the judiciary said, no, you can't do that. Well, he decided he'd steal it from investors in Freddie Mac and Fannie Mae. Yeah, unprecedented, right. Unprecedented that they noticed. We'll be right back. Stay with us.
Looking at all the life. There were plants and birds and rocks and things. There were sand and hills and rain.
Welcome back. Yeah, we're hearing from Nancy Pelosi. You know, you're either with us or you're with this tyrant over here, Trump. You know, choice, according to her, is Trump or the Constitution. You got to choose right now. But of course, Nancy Pelosi, you know, we got to pass this bill to find out what's in it. We don't care if it's constitutional or not. These are the people who just voted that when babies are born, we're not talking about unborn babies here. We have moved beyond abortion debate. And so they've now said babies born in America are dead on arrival as far as Democrats are concerned. And anybody, you know, they're fair game to be killed. You survive a murder attempt by an abortionist, they can still kill you, even when the health of the mother is no longer an issue. And you think about all of the decades throughout civilization. We find babies in the trash can or dumped in a toilet or something by somebody. They go after the mother. Oh, not going to do that. Not the Democrats. Not anymore. And so she says, well, you know, either choose a Trump or choose the Constitution. No, we want to have freedom. We want to have a moral society here. And we want to have a country, which means you have a border. She's out there saying the founders didn't want a king. No, they didn't want a king, and they didn't want people like Obama either, you know, or Kamala Harris. They actually wanted natural-born citizens to run for office, not what we, every election now, we're getting people who, their parents came here, were not citizens, had the kids, and so now we're getting anchor baby presidents. That's not the Constitution. That's not the 14th Amendment. But she goes in and says, the founders didn't want a king. Obama acted like a king, didn't he? I mean, he self-ratified treaties. He didn't care about the Constitution. He didn't care about the Congress. He wanted Obamacare, so he just ripped the money off from investors who'd been lied to, said, we've got mortgages here that are backed by the government. We'll call them Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. And he said, no, we'll take that. We'll take that to fund my Obamacare welfare state. And so they don't really care too much about the Constitution, and they kind of act as if they're the king. They said the founders didn't want a king. No, but they did want borders. They did want borders. The founders didn't want a welfare state. That's one thing they didn't want. I'll tell you what other things the founders wanted. They wanted guns to defend themselves against a government that got too powerful. They wanted it not because they loved war. They wanted it as a check and a balance. They wanted it like a mutual assured destruction for the same reason that both Russia and America built up nuclear weapons, mutually assured destruction as a deterrent. We don't want to use this, but it's there as a deterrent. Now I think the Democrats and Republicans actually want to use those missiles. They don't want to see any peace anywhere, North Korea anywhere else, especially if Republicans are going to get credit for it. They also wanted different branches of government. They wanted different powers. I'll tell you what the founders wanted. They didn't want a judiciary that acted like a king. They thought the judiciary was not very threatening because it had no power to enforce its rulings. That was an opinion that lasted for a very long time. You had Andrew Jackson say, well, the Supreme Court's made their decision. Let's see him enforce it. And he went ahead and did what he had the power to do in spite of these opinions. And yet, and we kind of see that a little bit with Obama. When you had a judge say, you can't steal that money from those investors to pay for Obamacare subsidies. He said, I'll do it. I'll do it anyway. Well, I'll appeal it, and under appeal, I'll continue the process. President Trump, on the other hand, when you have any single federal judge anywhere drop a black ball on a particular action that President Trump has authority for, you know, when Nancy Pelosi says, well, we might have a president who does act like a king and who takes away your guns. How about that? Well, there is no delegated authority in the Constitution for the president to take away guns. As a matter of fact, that's what the Second Amendment is there for, to expressly prohibit that. But the president does have authority to protect our border and to use the military as commander in chief. And so he's just saying, I'm going to exercise my authority. Under Obama, using DACA, what the executive branch did was they said, I know we swore to uphold the Constitution and that we're going to enforce the laws, but when it comes to immigration laws, we're going to defer action on that. We're not going to enforce that. And that, by the way, sadly, is still the position of the Trump administration. We're at the Trump on this border situation. I wish he would do more and have done it sooner. Take a look at this latest little episode here coming out of Massachusetts. This is a restaurant, Massachusetts restaurant, earlier this month. Woman has now been arrested and is being deported. Her name is Roseanne Santos. She's 41 years old. She came from Brazil back in 1994. And so she's been here for 25 years. She came on a tourist visa, and she never left. And so she saw this guy who's 23 years old in the restaurant wearing a MAGA hat, and she just couldn't help herself. She assaulted him, attacked him, verbally, physically. He said, the minute I walked in and sat down, the woman said something to me. What does your hat say? What does your hat say? And I showed her. And she goes, why would you wear that here? And I said, it's America, and I can wear this hat wherever I want. Well, she didn't like that because I guess she thought she was still in Brazil. I don't know. They don't like that sort of thing. But I thought this was the supreme irony yesterday. We had Jorge Ramos deported. Now, it wasn't that tyrant President Trump who deported him, but it was Maduro down in Venezuela. And he not only got deported, but he got deplatformed out of the country. How does it feel, Jorge? You still support deplatforming InfoWars off of social media? Because think about what he said. He said, I showed him this video, and he didn't like it. He got so angry that he confiscated all of our cameras and all of our videos, kind of like what YouTube did to me about 9 months ago. Confiscated all my videos. They didn't like the content that I was putting up because it didn't match with their politics. It embarrassed them. I exposed their lies. I exposed their foreign wars or false flags, other things. And of course, everybody here at InfoWars, they don't like that kind of stuff. You expose the surveillance state, the military-industrial complex, the lies of socialism, that embarrasses them, just like it embarrasses Maduro to see Venezuelans going through the garbage cans trying to find food because he is hoarding it all. Yeah, that's right, Bernie. It's the communist leaders who have all the food in those countries with lines. It isn't the rich countries where the rich people get all the food. No, no. It's exactly the opposite. What a liar Bernie Sanders is. Yeah, he comes across to these young kids as being authentic. He is far, far from authentic. But going back to Jorge Ramos, not only did they confiscate all of his videos, like YouTube shut down all the InfoWars videos last year, he said they didn't give us a reason. Well, yeah, that's right. You know the reason better than anybody. I was never given a reason. I was never given a strike on anything that they took down from my channel, from this show. Never given a reason. He said, they just said to us that we'd been expelled from the country. I would say, yeah, they never gave me a reason. They just said, we've been expelled from the internet. We've been expelled from social media. No reason needed. Because they are dictators and tyrants just like Maduro. But we got people who can't call them that, don't we? I don't have any problem calling them that. You know what they are. Everybody knows what they are. They are no different. These social media companies, these journalism companies like CNN, no different from Maduro themselves.
Using free speech to free minds. It's the David Knight Show.
The interview ended after 15 minutes. I asked him about the lack of democracy in Venezuela, about the reports of abuse, torture, and political prisoners. And when I show him the video on my iPad of some kids looking for food in a trash truck. Then he stopped the interview. They confiscated all the cameras. They confiscated the videos. They confiscated the interview. They took away our cell phones. I don't have a cell phone. And they stole my work. My job is to ask questions, and he stole our jobs. And he thinks that that he can censor international press the same way he censors people in Venezuela, but he cannot do that. We won't be silent. This is an abuse.
Well, that's great. Yeah, I sympathize with Jorge Ramos. He had his work stolen. They'd been there maybe a couple of days. They had all that work stolen. I've worked here for 6 years. I had that work stolen by YouTube and the internet censors. I don't know if Jorge and Univision ever said anything when we had all of our videos confiscated and they didn't give us a reason and then told us that we were expelled, not from a country, but from the internet. Yeah, no problem. See, that's what happens. It's called tyranny. Free speech is there to protect us against tyrants with titles, with uniforms, or with corporate boards. No more than I would allow a bank to steal my money, I shouldn't allow a social media company to steal my speech. But they don't really care about our freedoms, do they, on the Democrat side? They just want to push free stuff to everybody. I want to talk about that in the free-for-all that's become the Democrat primary. But before I do, I want to focus on reparations. I was talking last night to my wife, and I said, what is this going to look like, you know, when they want to do reparations? Because now this tactic of the radical, racist, liberal fringe, it's been kicked around probably since the Black Power movement, one form or the other. Nobody ever took it seriously. But now the Democrats are taking it very seriously. Just this last election that we had 2 years ago, we had Obama reject reparations. We had Hillary Clinton reject reparations. We had Bernie Sanders reject reparations. And yet today, most of the Democrats are embracing it, or even explicitly or even implicitly, like Bernie Sanders is doing now. He's reversed himself on this. So as I was saying to my wife, I said, you know, this looks a great deal to me, like what we see happening in South Africa with the ANC, the African National Conference. So I call them the African National Communists under Nelson Mandela. The DNC here in America, the Democrat National Committee, is now becoming the ANC of South Africa. That's really what this is turning into. As a matter of fact, I thought it was kind of interesting. It's not even been 4 or 5 days since you had 5 members of the Congressional Black Caucus use taxpayer money to go to South Africa to a Nelson Mandela concert to see Beyonce and a lot of other music stars performing in this concert. They spent $60,000 of taxpayer money, $12,000 apiece, to send these 5 Democrats of the Congressional Black Caucus to South Africa to celebrate the 100th anniversary of the birth of Nelson Mandela. And what else did Nelson Mandela give birth to besides the ANC? I've talked many times to Simon Roche in South Africa. He was somebody who, as a white man, he had supported the African National Congress. He had supported them in their effort to get rid of apartheid. He thought that was morally reprehensible. And yet, the communists only talk about morality in order to get into office. Once they get into office, they show what they really are. Thieves, kleptocrats, justifying taking everything, including not just your rights, not just your freedoms, but all your property, and justifying it along humanitarian lines or along envy or jealousy or now racism. Because they would confiscate all the property in Europe by talking about class warfare, economic class warfare. In South Africa, just like here in America, they want to use race warfare as a justification to steal. Because that's what socialists and Marxists always do. Steal everything. And remember, it was just last September that they started ramping up the rhetoric in South Africa. And Simon Roche, others who are white Afrikaners, their families have been there for 400 years as well in that country. They got along peacefully, not with the British ultimately, but they got along more peacefully with the Zulus there in more recent times, the last 200 years. And the Zulus are with the white Afrikaners to say that we don't want this communist confiscation of land, because the Zulu tribe never gave up their land. They always maintained control of that, yet they're still inside South Africa. And as Simon Roche is pointing out, it was the open borders and massive migration from neighboring countries into this area. They became the base of the Communist Party that is now saying, we're going to take the farms from the white farmers who've had them there for hundreds of years. And the Zulus are saying, don't do that. They're raising all the food, number one. Number two, we don't want to set the dangerous precedent that these communists can take property from anybody, because they'll take it from us next. And so we were talking about this quite a bit last fall. And even a year ago, this is the way that Ebony Magazine here in the U.S. Couched it. February 28th, 2018, almost exactly a year ago. Take that, colonizer. South Africa is going to seize all white-owned land. Ebony Magazine was very upfront about it exactly a year ago. South African Parliament has voted to seize all of the country's white-owned land, said Ebony Magazine. Ebony Magazine is not known, by the way, as a white supremacist organization. This is not a white supremacy conspiracy theory or fear-mongering. This is reality. The South African Parliament voted to do it. The ruling party there is really being pressured by the radical Marxist Julius Malema and others. And we've shown you the pictures of them saying, kill the white man, kill the Boer, take his land. Julius Malema, the radical Marxist, and others are saying, it's the time for reconciliation is over. Now is the time for justice. It's justice, see? That's what we hear from all of the radical left Democrats, don't we? Social justice, economic justice, racial justice, social justice warriors. And it's just your stuff that they want. That's all it is. That's all it is. Time now is for justice. We will restore, this is what the radical Marxist there in South Africa says, we will restore the dignity of our people, and we will not compensate the criminals who stole our land. Oh, well, you know, I have to throw in, this is South Africa now. This is not the DNC here in America, the Democrat National Committee, because they sound so much alike. Maybe that's what they learned in the $60,000 junket that these Congressional Black Caucus members went on. And yet, as this was talked about, that was a year ago. Back in September, President Trump, as we're getting more and more of these reports, President Trump said, tweeted out, I'm going to study the South Africa land and farm seizures and expropriations and the large-scale killing of farmers. South African government is now seizing land from white farmers. And then South Africa comes back and sounds exactly like the DNC here in America. South Africa totally rejects this narrow perception, which only seeks to divide our nation and reminds us of our colonial past. That's exactly the way they respond. We'll talk about this. We'll talk about how this is going to look. I mean, is this going to be a skin color check mark that you put on your 1040 form? Exactly how the Democrats are going to implement this reparations. Welcome back. We're going to talk about what reparations look like. We've had, and we'll talk about how the Democrats now have embraced a radical proposal that's been floating around for decades, and it's already being implemented in South Africa. It's funny how these things roll out. You know, we could learn, if we can't learn from history, it seems like we could learn from current events. We could see what's happening in China with the social credit scores over there. We could see what's happening to Jorge Ramos, having his work confiscated, being shut down, being deported even. Yeah, right. Maybe we could learn from some of these things and kind of apply the same principles here. Tyranny looks the same everywhere. And so they're trying this reparations in South Africa. They've got the radical Marxists there and the mainstream ruling party that's tied to the ANC. They're saying, we're going to take all the farms from the white people because they just don't deserve it. They stole it from us. Hundreds of years ago, their ancestors stole it from us. And so, I don't know, I guess statute of limitations. What is the statute of limitations on that? To go back, you know, the sins of the father, the sins of the grandfather, the great-great-great-great-great-great-grandfather? How far does it go back? And how easy is it going to be here in the U.S. to kind of differentiate between who's white and who's black? There's been a lot of interracial marriage, as Pat Buchanan points out. We'll take a look at some of the questions that he raises. We'll look at some of the proposals from the Democrats and compare them to what's happening in South Africa. Quite frankly, folks, as radical as the Democrats have become, when I was talking to Stephen Roche about what was happening in South Africa, I said, this is the future of America. And he said, oh, yeah, absolutely. They're going to bring these same tactics, these same threats, the same kind of violence to America, and it will come after 2020. One way or the other. It's going to continue. They're going to continue to go down this path, even if they don't win in 2020. It's coming to America, and you can see it now. This massive movement, shift to the radical Marxist left by the Democrat Party. I've said they are not even socialists. They are radical Marxists. And I think this reparations issue illustrates it better than anything. We need to fight socialism in this country, not in Venezuela, as I said yesterday, just like we've got to protect our borders and not the borders of other countries abroad with our military. Use the military to protect our borders and use your bully pulpit and all of your powers to fight socialism in this country, not in Venezuela. Don't give them an alibi and say, oh, we failed because the Americans intervened here. Intervene less in this country, as a matter of fact, so that they can't blame the failures of government mandates on a free market, because when the government intervenes, it's not a free market anymore. Real quickly, before we get into the reparations, I just want to tell you about some of the specials that we have at InfoWarsStore.com, because that's what funds this program. Just as Jorge Ramos got the bums rush out of Venezuela, we got the bums rush out of social media. They're trying to deplatform us, just like they did to him. Now, they have no problem understanding that's tyranny, but they don't want to call it tyranny here in the United States, even though it is. Even though we've had the Supreme Court say in the past, 1946, they said, even if the public square is owned by a corporation, they can't suspend free speech in the public square. Jack Dorsey knows that his business model is the public square. He said that at least eight times. But, you know, they're still working on doing that type of thing. But if you want to keep us going, folks, you can go directly to InfoWarsStore.com. We have a lot of products there to support your health, to support the First Amendment, to support a free speech, your free speech and the free press. And we've got some specials there as well right now. We've got Alpha Power, 50% off. We have our new InfoWars Life protein bars at 40% off if you get two boxes or more. We've got them in two different flavors, vanilla coconut and chocolate peanut butter. I just had my son and my wife taste the chocolate peanut butter. They were amazed. They loved the way that tasted. It's only 240 calories. It's got 15 grams of protein, natural protein, and it is packed with fiber. Finally, we have turmeric, our body's formula, our turmeric formula and bodies. It's a high-quality, pure turmeric, along with other powerful natural ingredients to help support your body to fight inflammation, joint pain, help you with joint mobility, flexibility, and many other things. You can find BodEase, our powerful turmeric formula, 50% off at InfoWarsStore.com. All right, I was just talking about the reaction of the South African government, how much it sounds like the reaction of the Democrats. You know, they say, well, you're just trying to divide us. No, actually, they are the ones trying to divide everybody along racial lines into a race war, both in South Africa and here. They were saying back in September, South Africa had, as of a few months ago, because they're confiscating land from white farmers, because they are inciting violence against white farmers, they have for the first time become incapable of feeding their population. We've seen this before. We saw it in Zimbabwe, where the Marxists took over from the colonialists in Rhodesia. They've now become a net importer of food for the first time in their history. That's why the Zulus are saying, don't take the farms from them. You got 20% of the people raising 80% of the food. Don't take away their farms. And we don't want that dangerous precedent established, because after they come for these guys by justifying it on their skin color, then they'll come after the Zulus next. And the Express says, even though the president was making the case for land reform, many commentators have insisted that this is a land grab to further inflame racial tension. White farmers in South Africa have said they've been targeted in horrific attacks this year. They were ignored by police, encouraged by the government. Yes, we know that. I've done many interviews with the people in South Africa. South African President Ramaphosa said that land ownership changing hands is essential to fulfill the vision of Nelson Mandela, which the Black Congressional Caucus just spent $60,000 to go attend a 100th anniversary of his birth, Nelson Mandela, learning these tactics of what's going on with the ANC so they can bring him back for the DNC here in America. Ramaphosa writes, this is no land grab, nor is it an assault on private ownership of property. That's exactly what you're going to hear from these Democrats. South Africa has learned from the experiences of other countries and will not make the mistakes that some of those have, you know, like neighboring Zimbabwe. He argued that 97% of South Africa's total agricultural holdings are owned by 7% of landowners, and 72% of farms and agricultural holdings are owned by whites. So therefore, it's obviously racist, right? Can't have that. Because, oh, we're not going to just steal money from people because of their race, but here I've got these statistics that will justify my confiscation. We've seen this before. You know, whites are privileged, therefore they're racist, and they're also thieves. And so it is now justified for me to steal from them. We are going to justify that based on envy, jealousy, and racism. And talking about privilege, that's the big deal. You know, we've seen all this before, haven't we? I'm listening to a book by Annie Jacobson about Operation Paperclip. She does a great job of writing and reading her books. And it's kind of interesting when you go back and you look at the attitude of the Nazis. You know, they had two classes of people. They had the Übermensch, and then they had the Untermensch, you know, the subhumans, submen, and the above men, the supermen, the master race for the slaves that were going to be taught. They could do these kinds of experiments that these Nazi scientists were doing on people and all these different atrocities. They could do it with immunity because they had demonized these people. They're subhuman. Yeah, they look like human, but they are subhuman. And we hate them because they've got most of the property or they've been successful. They're more successful than you. They use the envy card against the Jews in Germany and so forth. Well, now that's being done. That same tactic is being done here in America and in South Africa. You hate these people because, look, they've got a disproportionate amount of wealth. They're wealthier as a group than you are. Therefore, they must have gotten it through malicious means. And they're awful people. They're subhuman people. So take it from them. Elizabeth Warren says reparations for Native Americans. She's going to throw Native Americans in there as well. Obama wouldn't do that. Obama said, no, not for Native Americans. Maybe talking about for blacks, but then it creates others. I'm not really going to endorse that. But maybe we do need to make some kind of an adjustment for, you know, for black people, he would say. But now we've got Julian Castro. He wants a reparations task force. This is the guy who was a HUD secretary for Obama. He's got a twin brother who is a congressman. He wants to run for president. Their mother, one of the founders of La Raza, the race. Everything for La Raza, the race. Nothing for anybody else. That's their motto. So I guess when we look at reparations in the context of that, I guess we can tie in Native Americans. We can tie in Hispanics. We can tie in black, basically everybody except white people. It's not okay to have anything as a white person. Now, Kamala Harris is also pushing into reparations. And, of course, remember, her father is from Jamaica. Her mother is from India. She was born here, which basically means that she's not a natural-born U.S. citizen, should not be running for president. But it also means that she doesn't care much about her history. She is not an indigenous person, but she's trying to pretend that she is, kind of like Beto did. You know, he's not Hispanic, but he wants to pretend. Well, she's... wants to pretend she's indigenous and with them.
Liberty, it's your move. And now, the David Knight Show.
Welcome back. You know, we look at the two front runners so far in the crowded Democrat field, and we'll talk a little bit about what some of them are pushing in this free-for-all for the nomination. They've got a couple of dozen different people already who have thrown their hats into the ring. We've got a lot more governors talking about doing it. Joe Biden again, you know, he's Biden his time. He always does. Joe B. Biden his time on the sidelines as he did last time. Everybody begging him to get into the race. So they've got quite a few people who are there. But the leaders right now according to polls, are Kamala Harris, Elizabeth Warren, Cory Booker, but especially Elizabeth Warren and Kamala Harris at the front. And they are pushing reparations. As you hear Elizabeth Warren say, she wants to extend it to Native Americans. And so I just wonder how much money she thinks she's going to get compensated for. Because whatever they put in there, she's going to get what? One thousandth of it, you know, 1/10/24th or 1/20/20th, as people said, as she's running for president 2020. I don't know how much money she thinks she's going to personally get out of it. Of course, what she wants to get out of it is elected to office. That's why she's focusing on that. And then you've got Kamala Harris, called out initially by her father over the phony identity politics. You remember when she was bragging about smoking marijuana? Oh, yeah, yeah. I listened to all these Snoop Dogg and these other guys. When I was in college, I used to smoke pot. I'm from Jamaica. You kidding me? Of course I smoke pot. And he was very angry about that. My dear departed grandmothers, whose legacy I described on essays, also wrote about it in a book, must be turning in their grave right now to see their family's name, reputation, and proud Jamaican identity being connected in a fraudulent stereotype. Oh, yeah, that's what Kamala Harris engages in, is stereotypes. Fraudulent ones, especially. Fraudulent, this is her father. She's engaging in fraudulent stereotypes in pursuit of identity politics. Our family wishes to categorically disassociate ourselves from this travesty. Well, maybe he also needs to explain to her that they would like to disassociate themselves from any reparations, because in her ancestry, this woman who wants to virtue signal to us about getting rid of Columbus Day and having an Indigenous People's Day, she wants reparations and so forth. It turns out that her paternal great-grandmother was the daughter of a Jamaican slave plantation owner who founded the city of Brownstown, Jamaica. This was pointed out by Rob Dew a couple of days ago. He wrote about it in Reflections of a Jamaican Father. Again, the same father of Kamala Harris, who just said that she's engaging in fraudulent stereotypes in the pursuit of identity politics, and that he wants to, in the strongest possible way, distance himself from this travesty of a campaign that Kamala Harris's daughter is running. He said, my roots go back within my lifetime to my paternal grandmother, Miss Chrissy, who was Christina Brown, a descendant of Hamilton Brown. Hamilton? Wait a minute. Named after Alexander Hamilton? This icon of the left, who also, by the way, was a slave owner. A descendant of Hamilton Brown, who is on record as a plantation and slave owner and founder of Brownstown. Okay, there you go. She's not descended from American citizens. She wasn't born to American citizens, which makes her not qualified under the Constitution to run for office. But just like Marco Rubio and Ted Cruz, she's not qualified to run. But she's also not qualified to talk about reparations because her ancestors were slave owners. But they will. And you've got Julian Castro talking about it, and Elizabeth Warren talking about it, and Cory Booker implicitly using it. This is what the people in South Africa had to say about it. This notion is based on a distorted image of the past. The term expropriation without compensation is a form of semantic fraud. It is nothing more than theft justified by racism. They know exactly what this is. It's redistribution. It's Marxist theft. And they justify it by appealing to their racism. We'll be right back. Stay with us.
In a world of deceit, telling the truth is a revolutionary act. And now, the David Knight Show.
Welcome back on this Wednesday, February the 27th, 2019. We have President Trump in North Korea. I'm sorry, meeting the North Korean dictator in Vietnam, in Hanoi. You know, it was kind of funny yesterday. All these reporters, Fox News, MSNBC, all these different White House correspondents were thrown out of the hotel after Kim Jong-un's security detail realized that they were the press was staying in the same hotel that the security people for Kim Jong-un were in, just summarily threw them out. As the Fox White House reporter said, I've been covering this stuff for 20-some-odd years, and he said, I've never had a situation like this. We paid for this, and we have our hotel rooms, and we've had a foreign leader just throw us out. He said, we were staying in right next door to Emmanuel Macron at one of these conferences. No other leader has ever had this kind of approach. Well, that's what happens when you have socialism, when you have a centrally planned, centrally controlled economy. It kind of goes to their head, you know, just like we've already seen after, 6 weeks now? And we've got occasional cortex out there saying, shut up. I'm the boss. That's how it is. I have power. I have power. And we have to be worried about what these people are going to do. Not only are they out there in a free-for-all competing with each other, seeing who can give us the most free stuff as they take away our freedoms. Today, they've got a vote on taking away more of our freedoms to defend ourselves. That check against unchecked power by the central government, having the Second Amendment. But how? Let's just, one more thing about the reparations, because I think it's important that we stop and ask, how are they going to do this? We see how it's being done in South Africa. We understand. There they've got thugs who come to your home and kill you if you're white. And that's a message that's being sent for the white people. Get out now while you can. We're going to take your property. Don't make us kill you. But we don't have a problem doing that. You know, we'll take little babies and stick them in an oven and burn them to death and shoot the parents. They've done that many times. And so will it look like that? Well, not if they don't take the guns first. And, of course, they're working on that incrementally. The next domino to fall, the next razor cut to that fundamental freedom is likely to come today from the Democrats with another gun control bill. But, you know, they might have some Antifa Marxist students here in the U.S. come around and do what the thugs in South Africa are doing. Or maybe they will do it in a not-so-confrontational way. Maybe they won't go down the obvious path that they're doing in South Africa. Maybe what they'll do is, on your 1040 form, there'll be a little box there. You know, like you got the dependent boxes and everything. There'll be a little box there, and you can check your skin color. And if you got one skin color, you will pay more. If you got another skin color, you will get more back from the government. You know, give you a you know, skin color credit, color credits. maybe that's the way they're going to do, right? Because we're going to categorize everybody in a country that was created 400 years ago. We're going to categorize everybody by the sins of the father, the sins of the skin color. I just wonder, you know, since Elizabeth Warren wants to include Native Americans in all this, are we going to have them contribute any money to reparations, or are they going to be receiving it? Because, you know, they were also guilty of slavery. They were also guilty of genocide against other tribes. They enslaved white people as well. They, you know, were engaged in war, genocide, slavery. Every civilization, every culture has. That happened back in Africa as well. But now we've got Elizabeth Warren, Kamala Harris, Julian Castro. We got Cory Booker implicitly using it to justify his baby bonds. And if we go back to 2016, as I just said, Obama rejected reparations then. Hillary rejected them then. Bernie rejected them then. But now Bernie is kind of, what does that mean? Well, yeah, I don't know what it means, because he rejected it 4 years ago. It means he's sitting on the fence, kind of seeing which way the wind is blowing. Pat Buchanan asked, you know, how is this going to work? Having embraced Medicare for all, free college tuition, and a Green New Deal that would mandate the end of oil, coal, and gas-fired power plants, the Democrat Party is now continuing to lurch to the left, says Pat Buchanan. And he says, as Kamala Harris is out there saying there's been a systemic wealth gap between black and white Americans, I am serious about taking an approach that would change policies and structures and make real investments in black communities. Elizabeth Warren says we got to confront the dark history of slavery and government-sanctioned discrimination in this country. Well, Elizabeth, let's make sure that you understand that this was Democrat government-sanctioned discrimination. Maybe we should call it, instead of white reparations, maybe Here's how you implement it. You go into the 1040 and you type down, are you white? If yes, then answer question number two. Are you a Democrat? Oh, okay. Well, then in that case, you do have to pay the reparations, because it was the Democrats who gave us Jim Crow that they're talking about. It's the Democrats that are still putting on blackface and Klan robes and think that's funny and getting away with it, getting a pass. The governor, the attorney general in Virginia, yeah, no problem with any of that. Robert Byrd, they loved Robert Byrd. The Clintons loved Robert Byrd. Big leader in the Klan, never had a problem with that in West Virginia. So, you go back and you look at the people who are putting in government-sanctioned discrimination called Jim Crow. Those are Democrats. So maybe the Democrats, Democrat rank and file, ought to pay for the reparations if anybody's going to pay for them. She goes on to say, Elizabeth Warren, history has crippled the ability of black families to build wealth in America for generations. Oh, really? Really? As Pat Buchanan says, the idea that the black Americans are handicapped by history and cannot accumulate wealth is a very controversial assertion. There are a lot of very wealthy black people in entertainment and sports, in government, for example. A lot of very wealthy black people in business as well. Elizabeth Warren says that Native Americans must also be a part of this this conversation. So let's have a conversation on this. As Pat Buchanan says, who would qualify then to benefit from these reparations? And how are we going to, and who, we really should say, who is going to pay for the immense transfer of wealth from one group of people who are defined by racial lines to another? He said, would all black Americans, even the middle class and the affluent, be entitled to reparations? How would the government go about proving that folks living here today had ancestors in slavery before 1865? So if you're black, did you come as Kamala Harris did? Or were you here as part of the slavery issue? Or did you come afterwards? Would all blacks, as he said, when we look at this, how are we going to determine who's black and who isn't? Take the Obama family, for example. Obama's got one black parent, one white parent. Now, Michelle has got two black parents. She would have to show that they were here before slavery, I guess. But then what do we do about their children? Do they get reparations? Have the Obamas demonstrated the fact that if you are born black, you can't succeed here in America? Or they disprove that? I don't know. He said Kamala Harris, again, is one of the best examples of that. Isn't it the poverty itself that produces negative consequences regardless of race? So where is the justice if you're going to say, well, we're going to do something to help poor people, which is basically where these guys are going to go, free stuff for everybody. What about poor white people or poor Asians or poor Hispanics that weren't affected or weren't part of this slavery issue? It says, what about the white people? When we had the massive waves of immigration that they love to talk about in Ellis Island, we had people coming from Eastern and Southern Europe. We had Poles, Italians, Jews, Slavs, Slovaks. Slavery was gone before they arrived. They had nothing to do with Jim Crow. A lot of them didn't even vote for Democrats. A lot of the people who were here didn't vote for Democrats. But these are people who came after slavery had ended. But you're going to tax them because they're white or because they're DNA? You're going to have DNA tests like Elizabeth Warren did? All right, we'll be right back. Stay with us. Back. You know, it's not just reparations that the Democrat candidates are throwing around freely. They're throwing around, of course, everything freely. The free-for-all is resulting in them telling all that you can get everything for free. All people can get all things for free. Free-for-all, all for free. That should be the motto of the Democrat Party. But of course, it could look very nasty when they start allocating resources based on skin color. And this is what we're talking about. And that has some real practical issues that people ought to pin them down on. Okay, so what do we do in the Obama family, for example? Does Michelle get reparations? How about Obama? You know, he's got one black parent who came here, allegedly, but who came here after slavery was ended. I mean, nobody in Barack's ancestry was involved in it unless they were slave owners themselves. I think people went back and looked at his history and found that on the white side, they did own some slaves, just like Kamala Harris's family. They're from Jamaica, and they were owners of slaves in Jamaica. Yeah, that happened, too. You had a lot of people who were owned by Native Americans as slaves. Every society has had that. But we have to pretend that it is a racial thing as justification for a race war and for theft. So how do we allocate that? Well, they don't necessarily care. And there's also, as we look at their push to give away free stuff, something else that is a new tactic that is coming around, and that is the push against the Electoral College. Ever since Hillary Clinton lost, they've been running this Russiagate red herring to try to cover up what they had actually done against people. You know, charge the people that for doing what they have done as they go in and destroy the records of what they have done that were illegal, that were attempt to overthrow the election, that were an attempt to keep us from seeing what happened inside the DNC during the primaries. But now, because Hillary Clinton lost, they have realized that one of their best chances of winning will be get rid of the Electoral College. And then we can just have a few big cities elect everybody. This is a trend that is now happening. Colorado is about to become the 12th state to join the National Popular Vote Interstate Compact. And they're going to get rid of the Electoral College. A lot of people think, well, that's just an anachronism from the 18th century. We don't really want that. But as some of the people in Colorado are pointing out, they're essentially throwing away their vote and giving it to people in California and New York. Colorado Democrat Governor Jared Polis is poised to hand over the state's power to elect presidents. He's going to hand it over to big cities, just a handful of big cities. He's going to sign the National Popular Vote Bill, recently approved by Democrat-controlled majorities in both the State House and Senate in Colorado. It'll give Colorado's 9 Electoral College votes to the candidates with the most popular votes nationwide. Bypassing the Electoral College will make the major urban centers that lean heavily Democrat the focus of the election campaigns. There'll be absolutely no need for a candidate to go to flyover country. They're not going to have to campaign in Wyoming, Nebraska, North Dakota. This is the reason why they set up the Electoral College. And I had a very practical example of this at the local level where I lived in North Carolina. We lived in a rural county. It was mostly farmland until, I guess, about 10 years or so before this began to happen. So you had a bunch of families who had been there, interestingly enough, some of them going back to the Revolutionary War. Been there a very long time. It's one of the oldest cities in North Carolina. And so you had a lot of people whose families had had these farms for hundreds of years. And then they started, this county was adjacent to the county that has University of North Carolina in Chapel Hill. And as Chapel Hill got bigger and bigger, they had some of the population spill over and start to build residential neighborhoods in this formerly rural, almost 100% farm county. They started buying up some of the farms, turning them into high-density housing. And so in this one corner of that county that was adjacent to Chapel Hill, you got a lot of people. And they looked at it and said, well, you know, we want to completely, radically change this county government. We want to start doing sustainable types of things like they wanted to do in university towns, you know, very liberal, and they wanted the government to start enacting all kinds of environmental mandates on people and so forth. And so we can't do it because we don't have the county commissioners elected at large by a popular vote. You have representation by different geographical areas within that county. And so they were very clever the way they took over this county. They went in and they changed it from a regional representation of county commissioners to an at-large representation of county commissioners. As soon as they did that, the very next election, every single county commissioner came from a couple of little neighborhoods there. And then they started ramming down what they wanted to do down the throats of these farmers who had been there for generations, telling them what they could and could not do with their land. That's the way this is going to look on a national basis. That's why we have the Electoral College. That's one of the reasons why we have. That's a practical reason. The other reason is that we've got to stop getting away from this consolidation of power into Washington. This will be another example of not only taking away the vote of people in these rural areas, even in Colorado, as Republican State Senator Jerry Sondheim of Sterling, Colorado, said, the bill will abdicate Colorado's voice in presidential elections. He said Republicans tried to drive home their point by jokingly suggesting language stating that Colorado would just be surrendering their vote to California. It'd be funny if it wasn't actually true, but it is true. Just as we see in some states, like in Virginia, the state politics is now driven by a couple of urban centers. That's a very common thing to have happen in various states. But you have some states that are so dominated by one city, and those states are some of the largest population states in the country. They will be dominating the election altogether if we get rid of the Electoral College. But Eric Holder is pushing on this very heavily, and he is one of the dozens of people talking about throwing his hat into the ring for the election. Eric Holder is a strategic thinker. You remember right after the after Obama left, he and Obama got together and they said they were going to start a movement across the country to elect attorney generals, because they knew that if they could get power with the attorney generals and with various federal judges, that they could get things done in the courtrooms that they couldn't win at the ballot box. Under Obama, the Democrats lost more than 1,000 seats across the country at every level, national, state, local. They were losing everywhere except in the courts, so they wanted to make a strategic move in the courts. So Eric Holder is pushing the Electoral College. Time to make the Electoral College a vestige of the past, said Holder. Now, we want to have the states, we want to reinforce the power of the states and the power of people everywhere, not to be dominated by a couple of urban centers. It's going to become even more of a pronounced trend once they shove everybody into a few mega cities under the UN 2030 Smart City Agenda. We'll be right back. Stay with us.
Broadcasting with the power of the First Amendment, it's the David Knight Show.
Welcome back on this Wednesday, February the 27th, 2019. You know, today the Hill is saying we've got all these Democrat governors. Usually governors get a lot more attention because they've done administrative work. They've organized things. It looks more like the president's job than a senator does. But we've had Barack Obama was the last president we've had, and most of the senators have already jumped in early, and they've gotten all this attention with their free stuff programs. Free stuff for everybody, just no freedom for anyone. And so they're saying, how do these Democrat governors get any attention for themselves? You know, because these other people have already staked out the high ground in terms of giving stuff away. And I think a good example of this is Kirsten Gillibrand. We need to remember and follow this money and take a look at what these people are doing, because as H.L. Mencken said, an election is an advanced auction of stolen goods. And so they typically will go out to corporations and they get massive donations from corporations. And then they do wonderful things for corporations like big drug companies. We had a clip that I wanted to play yesterday, Chris Wallace on Fox News, talking to Kirsten Gillibrand about getting money out of politics that she says she wants to do, and yet she's having these fundraisers thrown for her by big pharmaceutical executives. He called her out on that hypocrisy, and I want you to see her wiggle in the seat, trying to wiggle out of this, and she doesn't. But it is an advanced auction of stolen goods. Whether they're getting it from big corporations, Democrats as well as Republicans, or whether they are promising people reparations. See, that's where it starts to get really dangerous. One class of people, one skin color group of people, and again, how do we determine who we're going to take the money from, who we're going to give it to? A lot of problems with that. You know, people who came here, white and black, after slavery, are they involved in this either way? What about people who didn't have anything to do with it? I mean, you know, what about some of the people who are white, but maybe, you know, they fought to stop slavery? They should still have to pay reparations as well. But let's look at Kirsten Gillibrand. Follow the money in this advanced auction of stolen goods. Here she is with Chris Wallace on Monday.
Now, you're a top executive for Pfizer is holding a big fundraiser for you at the end of March. Tickets $1,000 to $2,700. Is Warren right that access to candidates is for sale?
No, but I think you do need to get money out of politics. The most important thing we have to do
She's getting her money out of politics,
the way our democracy functions. Today,
a lot of money out of
the wealthiest, most powerful lobbyists and special interest groups get to write bills in the dead of night. So when we're passing...
Okay, but answer
me. Because they give you money when you're running for office.
$2,700.
Let me finish. I got you. I got you. Okay. I got your point. I'm going to get to it. So when you write a bill in Medicare Part D and say, Medicare can't buy in bulk and get the cheapest prices for drugs. That's just a sweetheart deal for the drug companies so that they can charge you.
This is a drug executive.
These are your sponsors.
And who's a dear friend who I've known for years and years, who believes in my gay rights platform and believes in women's rights and women's equality.
But what about $2,700 tickets?
Let me finish. So what's wrong with Washington is there's so much corruption. So much corruption, so much greed. We can't actually pass common sense gun reform in this country, not because the American people aren't behind it, because they are, but because the NRA is more worried about gun sales than they are about the well-being of our kids. So what's really wrong with Washington is corruption and greed. So for
question?
Me, yes, just let me finish. So for me, that's why I'm banning federal
the artful
lobbying.
Dodger.
It's why I'm banning super PAC money. It's why I'm banning, I'm not having an individual super PAC, and why I'm banning corporate PAC checks. That is the first step to making sure that the moneyed interests, the powerful, the elite of the elite, don't have unbelievable influence over Washington. When the Koch brothers decide...
Just answer, though, $2,700 tickets. Are you going to go ahead and have the fundraiser or not?
Of course. I'm going to ask Americans all across this country to support my campaign. But taking away the influence that corporate PAC checks have, the fact that federal lobbyists get to control everything and write bills in the dead of night.
And you don't see a contradiction.
I don't, because at the end of the day, people are going to support our campaigns because they believe in us. They believe that I will fight for women's reproductive freedom, that I'll believe they will fight for LGBTQ equality, that I won't demonize people across this country. This country has always been great because we care about one another. We believe in the golden rule.
Okay, that's all I can take of this. The Pfizer exec is holding a big ticket item fundraiser for her because he cares so much about LGBT issues. It's not because he's looking for any help on regulatory capture or any kind of legislation like that. No. I mean, you'd be absolutely an idiot to think that it has something to do with that. Now, Chris Wallace knows that because they're his corporate sponsor as well as hers. But she also was a a government sponsor, member of Hamdi Ulukaya. He got $800,000. That was a bill that was pushed by New York's senators, Chuck Schumer and Kirsten Gillibrand. They made sure that he got set up nearly $1 million in an old yogurt factory. And then as he got on his feet, he had Hillary Clinton and others make sure that his kind of yogurt, Greek yogurt from Kobani, that would be the preferred diet of all school children everywhere. It gets a sweetheart contract as well. It gets a sweetheart deal on opening up a factory. Just come here as an immigrant. Isn't America a wonderful country? You know, you got all these people who come here from other countries. And, you know, even though these hateful Americans like you and I, whose families have been here for centuries, we get to pay to set them up in business. Nobody ever set up any of my grandparents with a $1 million factory for chocolate or any Willy Wonka sugar-filled yogurt, Greek yogurt stuff. Nobody ever did that to us, but she did that for him. It just must be the LGBT issue that she's all about, or basically opening up the borders. And then we have Bernie Sanders. Bernie Sanders was asked the uncomfortable question by Wolf Blitzer in the town hall meeting about whether or not he really is a socialist. You know, he's out there talking about how we're going to have a revolution. And I'm going to take back this. Trump says we're not going to have socialism, but we're going to have a revolution. So Wolf Blitzer went there, asked him, what's it going to look like if you become president? Are we going to have a socialist America? Here's the back and forth between Bernie and Wolf Blitzer.
Said in a State of the Union address, and I'm quoting him now, America, this is the president, America will never be a socialist country. Will that hold true if you're elected president?
If I am elected president, we will have a nation in which all people have health care as a right, whether Trump likes it or not. We are going to make public colleges and universities tuition free. We are going to raise the minimum wage to a living wage of at least $15 an hour. And whether Trump likes it or not, when I talk about
free
human
college,
rights, you know what that also means?
Wealthy
it
job.
Means that our kids and grandchildren have the human right to grow up in a planet that is healthy and habitable.
Well, let's just hope that these kids who support him do grow up.
And it is really a disgrace
before
and
it's
an
too late and they vote for him.
That we have a president who rejects science, who does not even understand that climate change is real and caused by you.
Okay, we leave it at that. Yes, rejecting science. Please explain to us the science behind this, Bernie. And then you can get into the dismal science of economics and how you're going to pay for all this stuff, which we're going to talk about when we come back. You know, they're going to give you health care as a right. You're going to have healthy, habitable planet. That's a right. But he goes on to say, we're going to move forward boldly. We're going to transform our energy system away from fossil fuels. So you're going to have a future that is going to be energy free as well. Not going to be free energy. No, you're not going to have that. It's going to be energy free. That's the austerity that these authoritarians are going to give you. It'll be liberty free as well. They're going to liberate you from the Bill of Rights. They're working on that today, the gun bill. We'll talk about that when we come back. Stay with us. Be right back. Welcome back. We don't have squib cakes, but we do have some new InfoWars Life protein bars. And basically, you can fund your health and you can fight back against the censorship. We're going to be talking about that coming up. You know, they had a lot of people who were not happy with what Brie Larson had to say about white men. Just shut up. Don't come to the press conferences. Don't come to my movies, whatever. So people said, oh, okay, well, maybe we won't. And they started commenting on that. Commenting on all the indications that look like this is going to be some kind of a movie to push a matriarchy. Who would think that would be the case? I mean, we've only had many of the Marvel stars coming out saying we need to subject ourselves to women. Only women can run the planet, you know. And so in response to that, we've had Rotten Tomatoes just say, well, I think we'll handle that just by shutting down all comments and reviews. We'll only let, nobody can say anything about this. You're not going to be allowed to indicate that you're interested in watching a movie or not interested in watching a movie. That's always been a metric that they've had out there before. But they said, well, we don't get the results we want. We'll just take it down. Kind of like what Maduro did yesterday with Jorge Ramos. So how does that look when it happens to somebody on their side? Maybe they could start to understand the principle involved. Nevertheless, if you want to get some protein bars, our new product, it's only been out about 2 weeks. It's in two different flavors, vanilla coconut, chocolate peanut butter. You can get 40% off if you get two boxes of those. It's got 15 grams of natural protein. It's packed with fiber, and it's only 240 calories. Great tasting vanilla chocolate or chocolate peanut butter, 40% off if you get two boxes or more. We also have 50% off of Alpha Power. We have 50% off BodEase. That's our anti-inflammatory product. Helps you with joint mobility, flexibility, support, and also a joint pain because it's got a very powerful natural anti-inflammation fighter, turmeric, and it's very high quality, pure turmeric, and many other powerful ingredients in bodies to fight inflammatory conditions in your joints and elsewhere. And you can get that now 50% off at InfoWarsStore.com. You know, when we go back and we look at Bernie Sanders, I just showed you Wolf Blitzer saying, well, you know, you want to, President Trump is attacking the Green New Deal, which basically is an incorporation of all the stuff that you said you want. And then Bernie goes, spends half the time talking about how we're going to have an entitlement to live in a healthy planet, which is basically Green New Deal. Talk about how health care is going to be a right. We're going to raise the minimum wage to $15 an hour so we'll all be rich. We'll be able to go to college for free so we'll all be very well educated, right? We'll know all the stuff that all these Bernie supporters know, all these millennial snowflakes know. We'll all have the millennial snowflake treatment. Yeah, it'd be kind of, kind of like sitting down and like Clockwork Orange where they strap your head down and pry your eyeballs open and watch this stuff. As a matter of fact, the comments, one of the best comments I saw of that expose of the people who had been hired, Cognizant, I think was the name of the company, they were subcontractors who were hired to do vetting of things for Facebook, determine what was hateful and what wasn't, and things that they could take down. And they were saying, well, we got PTSD. I had to watch this horrible stuff. Somebody put up a picture of Clockwork Orange on there. That put that picture up from Clockwork Orange where they're trying to condition him against violence. Basically, that's a good summary of what these people who are working for Facebook complained about. They said, yeah, YouTube was kind of like that in every way they described it. But the interesting thing was that one of the things they were wringing their hands about were all these things that were supposedly just wacko conspiracy theories. People were saying, you know, I'm having questions about whether or not the narrative that we saw about 9/11 is really true. You know, after I saw this stuff, it made me think, now that's exactly why they don't want you to see that stuff. But Bernie Sanders passed on using the S word, which he has used everywhere. Proud of being a socialist Democrat. Well, I don't know if he's a Democrat because he's never identified himself as that except when he wants to run as president. All the Democrats have become socialists. He is a socialist. And all the people who call themselves social Democrats or progressives, they are just simply socialist communists. Again, acting exactly like the ANC in South Africa is acting. And one of the things that is happening in the mainstream media and with some of the politicians, some of these guys, because they are, this is a crowded field. That's why I said it is a free-for-all. You got more than 24 people already saying they want to run for president. They're climbing over each other, trying to throw free stuff at the voters. And they're starting to get worried about this, some of the people in the Democrat Party who want to win elections. They understand that it's about the economy, and they also understand that even though it's about the economy, stupid, most people are not that stupid about the economy to believe that they can get free stuff forever without ever having to pay for it. And so the Hill is coming out here and saying, well, you know, this Medicare for All is worrying the centrist Democrats. Who are the centrist Democrats? I mean, please explain to me what that is. They're putting this narrative out there because they just came up with a new poll yesterday that shows that 64% of the voters surveyed believe that Democrats are socialists, that they back socialist policies, just as you saw with Bernie Sanders. You know, when he criticizes socialism, we showed you that when President Trump criticized at the State of the Union address, you could see Bernie doing a slow burn, red-faced, scrunching his face up. He looked like John McCain on a good day. John McCain could look really bad. Nobody could look worse than John McCain when he got angry. But Bernie Sanders is coming pretty close to a John McCain bad day as socialism being criticized. And he comes out and he's pushing back on it. Say, we're going to beat him. We are going to establish it. We are going to have free stuff for everybody. Yeah, there he is. And then when he got the chance, he ran from the label. Why? Because 64% of the people believe that they are socialist. And we don't want this stuff shoved down our throats. And so the Hill comes out and says, well, you know, they're pushing this back and we've got these centrist Democrats out there, theoretically. And I said, already the Republican campaign operatives are trying to paint Democrats with a broad brush. linking vulnerable lawmakers in conservative-leaning districts with liberal colleagues pushing for a single-payer health care system. Well, they all are. They all are pushing for that. And it's not a stretch. And the American people know that it's not a stretch. They know that they are socialists. And frankly, they don't really care at this point anymore because, like I was saying before, when they get rid of the Electoral College, I mean, we need to be going the other way around. And as I talked about how the liberal Democrats from this university town moved into the county that I was living in, changed one little thing in the rules to make sure that their little enclave of tightly packed liberal homes could control the land use of these farmers who'd been there for many, many, many generations. And we need to start going the other way. I mean, they had essentially regional representation, which is what the Electoral College is about. They had regional representation, and they got rid of that. They said, no, it's going to be winner take all. We're going to elect everybody at large. And so I said, you know, we need to start that tactic of regional representation. We need to make that stronger in the states, within the states, and we need to even make it stronger within the different counties. We don't need to eradicate it at the national level. That's going exactly the opposite direction. They don't really care about this because they believe that if they can get, you know, this is one of the reasons why they're running so boldly left. Because if they can do these at-large elections, then, the very radical cities, a few really large radicalized cities, will be the only votes that count anywhere. And they are very easily rigged as well, very easily corrupted, just like Chicago. Take a look at that. But the Hill comes out and says, speaking for some anonymous Democrat lawmaker who doesn't want to go on record. Why? Because he knows that the Democrat Party is a socialist party as well. So he speaks anonymously for them. Well, we've got extremists who want to shoot the moon. Some policies would be wonderful. Oh, yeah, he would love these policies. He really loves the policies, but you got to be pragmatic about it and get there gradually. One cut at a time, one slice at a time. They're not going to cut anything, but they will cut you. Death by a thousand cuts. Some policies would be wonderful, but you're not going to get them out of the Senate. You're not going to get them out of the White House right now. So as a House Democrat who represents a district that was won by Trump in 2016, and so he wants to be anonymous. He doesn't want to come out and support socialism, even though he really does. Kamala Harris says massive spending programs are about an investment. They're not a cost. So we don't have to worry about how to pay for this. This is the woman who's been lying to everybody about pot and about music and about drugs and about slavery, about her background. As she's trying to, as Attorney General in California, trying to jail the people who blew the whistle on Planned Parenthood out there getting body parts. You know, she did that saying that she came after them saying, you recorded them conspiring to traffic in baby body parts. You violated their privacy. Well, of course, right, because Roe v. Wade is a violation of privacy. Right? That's the only time they care about privacy is when they can claim it and kill a baby and get their body parts for commercial purposes. We'll be right back.
Free speech to free minds. It's the David Knight Show.
Welcome back. As I heard Nancy Pelosi talking about how, well, you got Trump or you got the Constitution. You got to pick one or the other. You can't have both, right? We're going to shut down his protecting the borders and saying it's a national emergency, even though we can see the thousands of people coming across openly massed together in caravans. As a Guatemalan security officer, the Guatemalan government said this was organized and funded prior to it happening. There was some big money behind all this stuff. But yeah, it's not an emergency, right? And they never had a problem with anything that Barack Obama did. They didn't have a problem with him stuffing planes with foreign currency and flying it to Iran, signing a treaty with them without and bypassing the Senate, doing the same thing with the climate treaty deal. Didn't have a problem with him funding Obamacare by stealing money from investors. Never had a problem with any of that stuff. But they got a problem with President Trump, you know, because they're all about the Constitution. And yet, these are the people who want to get rid of the Electoral College because it stands in their way. They don't want to have regional representation. They want to get elected with just a few big cities where they can easily corrupt the elections, stuff the ballots, and just do it at large. One of their other tactics they're openly now talking about, besides openly talking about socialism, government-run health care, reparations, and so forth, you know, free stuff for everybody, pork barrel politics. So they used to do on the plantations. It's what the Democrats still do on their plantation, the big one that's run out of Washington, D.C. You have the various states, you have the slaves line up, and they just have a big pork barrel there, and they reach in there and get what they want. Well, that's what they've got, is something for everybody. Free stuff for everybody. We don't have to worry about how we pay for it. We don't have to worry about the effects of raising minimum wage. Yeah, it's going to make things, just as we've seen in New York, made fast food very expensive for a lot of individuals who can no longer engage in it, which means that fewer people are going to be going there to eat, which means that they'll have fewer employees. They'll have to cut down on some of the employees anyway because they got to pay them more. So it has a way of leveling out in a way that Democrats don't want to admit. But now they're also talking about packing the Supreme Court. They've actually got a group pushing this for the Democrats called Pack the Courts. Pack the Courts. They want to expand the number of Supreme Court justices so they can pack the court. That's the other New Deal tactic, right? Going back to FDR again. FDR, the socialist, who truly did remake this country. We have had, again, going back to the fourth turning, looking at what Strauss and Howe did, looking at the cyclical nature of societies, and talking about how we have a major restructuring about every 80 years or so, about every four generations, we have a major restructuring. Well, we had one with FDR, the New Deal. Major restructuring and reformatting and reprioritizing of the government, ignoring the Constitution and so forth. We had another one before that with the Civil War, which also hearkens to some of the things that they want to do right now. And then prior to that, it was the American Revolution. So it looks like we're coming up to another time that looks like the Great Depression, FDR, and World War II, and it's right on time, right on the 2030 time frame, where they've got their new smart cities and packing everybody in the cities, where they can then get rid of the Electoral College and have a couple of mega cities elect the next president for us. But they want to pack the Supreme Court in the same way. So in some ways, it's no more shattering of norms than what's already being done to the judiciary to where it is today. Well, I would agree with that. They basically have escaped the bonds of the Constitution. You want to talk about tyrants and the Constitution, just take a look at the court system. The judges, there's actually a ruling that came down, slapping down the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, slapping them down for going back to the, using the vote and the opinion of a deceased judge. This guy died before they put out their opinion and they counted it. And they got slapped down for doing that, saying, judges can't rule from the dead. This may have big implications for the future for, you know, Ruth Bader Ginsburg. She may still be writing opinions after she's dead. I mean, she may be, for all we know. I haven't seen her personally for quite some time.
In a world of deceit, telling the truth is a revolutionary act. And now, The David Knight Show.
Welcome back. As I was just saying at the top of the hour, we had the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals counted the vote of a deceased judge in opinion, and they were slapped down Monday by the Supreme Court. The late Judge Stephen Reinhardt, a revered liberal judge, died March 2018, but he was listed as the author for a decision that the 11-judge panel of the Ninth Circus, you know, it's always the Ninth Circuit Court, isn't it? They issued the opinion a week after his death. And so the Supreme Court came out and said this. This is classic. The Ninth Circuit erred in counting him as a member of the majority. He was dead. That practice effectively allowed a deceased judge to exercise the judicial power of the United States after his death. But federal judges are appointed for life, not for eternity, quote unquote. That's coming from the Supreme Court. But I don't know. I mean, activist judges and liberals will use any kind of strategy to get what they want. You know, pretending that we have one judge anywhere can veto anything that the president does. Doesn't matter what it is. It doesn't matter how clearly it's defined in the Constitution. If the president, if President Trump does it, any judge anywhere can shut it down. Now, the judges didn't do that to Obama. Even when you had a judge say that Obama couldn't steal the money from Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, agreed with Congress on that. Congress didn't fund it. The judge that they went to agreed with Congress and said, that's right, Obama can't do that. So Eric Holder appealed it. And they continued to do it. President Trump, on the other hand, when he gets a decision from any federal judge anywhere, he immediately bows down and stops whatever he is pending appeal. Even though what he is doing is clearly empowered in the Constitution, and what Obama is doing with was doing with Obamacare was not in the Constitution. So how are they going to pay for this free stuff for everybody? Well, Kamala Harris says that, of course, we can afford $1 trillion of spending in the Green New Deal. These programs are about investment. They're not about cost. And she would be lying to you, just like she's lying to you about everything else. She says, I would say to these people who are concerned about the cost, well, we have to reframe the perspective. Yeah, let's get a perspective where numbers don't matter. Because the truth doesn't matter, no matter how obvious it is. Because the premise is that there is that the access to affordable health care should not be a privilege. It should be a right. So let's just start with that. We all have a right to that. And we don't have to worry about how it's going to be provided. And again, I'll remind you of what the liberals know that maybe many conservatives don't know. Certainly Barack Obama knew it. He talked about it. He said, you know, we have negative rights and we have positive rights. And he said, no, where the founders got it wrong was they came up and they protected negative rights. Their perspective was that there's a creator God. They were wrong on that, according to Obama. And we get our rights from a creator God. Or if you don't believe in a creator, call them natural rights that we all possess because we're equal as humans. Either way, we have these rights. And we did things like the Bill of Rights to say to the government, they don't give us any rights. The Second Amendment does not give us the right to protect ourselves. The First Amendment does not give us the right to free speech or to a free press. It says we have the right of free speech that we possess as individuals, and we have right to life, and we have the right to defend ourselves and things like that. So we have certain inalienable rights that we possess by being human that were given to us by God, and we put restrictions on the government from taking those things away from us. Whereas Obama says, no, 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 we want to go with positive rights. That's progressive. It's positive. All these wonderful labels that they use. No, no, we want positive rights. That means that you have a right to health care. You have a right to this and a right to that, which means that the government is going to give it to you, not God. You don't have that already. See, the government is not restrained from taking stuff away from you. The government is now going to be the provider. It's going to be your mommy, your daddy, your homeland. It's going to give you all things, and it will first take away everything from you, including your freedom. But they've got an interesting way of spinning this economically. You know, Elizabeth Warren says, my ultra-millionaire's tax is a big down payment on a Green New Deal. Okay, well, it's a down payment. How do we make the rest of the payments? That's kind of like somebody going in and saying, well, you know, I'd like to buy a new Lamborghini. There's no way that I can afford a, $300,000 car. But I can scrape together enough for a small down payment if you got a good deal going. And we'll worry about the payments later. That's Elizabeth Warren trying to sell you her new Green Deal, like a bad used car or new car seller. You know, how do you pay for the rest of this stuff? Well, you know, she may soak the rich for the down payment, but as we learned with the income tax, after they get a little bit of taste of that, they draw blood. Now they start with a new tax, and new taxes always start as just a tiny cut. And then as time goes by, you get another cut, you get another cut. Then they come out with a meat cleaver. They take off your arm. That's what happened with the income tax. At first, it was just a 1% tax on the 1% of the 1%, and it was only on their investment income. It wasn't on wages. And then they moved it down the middle class. They started taxing wages and so forth. That's what she's going to have to do. They're going to have to take everything from you. But they claim that they don't have to do that. They have a new theory that they've come out with. They actually call it modern monetary theory. I'm going to tell you this because you're going to hear this argument from them. And it's a very dishonest piece of sophistry. But they call it MMT. It's coming from a new economic school of thought, they say. And you got gurus of MMT like Professor Stephanie Kelton, served as the chief economist for the Democratic minority staff. And then she went on to advise Bernie Sanders on economics. So hang on to your hats. Here's the Bernie Sanders economics, MMT. More dubious than the Green Deal itself, says Robert Murphy, who wrote the article looking at it. And he goes back and he says, well, this isn't anything new, really. We understand and have for a very long time. We've had economists who point out that there are three ways that you pay for anything. You know, you can do it with taxes, you can do it with inflation, or you can do it with debt. Now, debt is really taxes deferred with interest, right? You're going to eventually pay for that, unless you inflate it away. That's why they put in inflation as the third thing. And he goes back and he talks about the different Austrian economists who have always pointed this out. But they want to tell you that we can have Medicare for all. We can have universal basic income. We can have free stuff for everybody, everything free. And we don't have to worry about it because we just spend the money. As they say, this is the way they're going to, this is the sophistry that these idiots are going to use to try to sell this to you. The short answer to how do we pay for the Green New Deal is easy. We'll pay for it just as we pay for everything else. Congress will authorize necessary spending and Treasury will spend it. This is how we do it. Always has been, always will be. The money that's spent for its part is never raised first. To the contrary, federal spending is what brings the money into existence. Ah, there we go. We just print money. It just magically comes out of nowhere, just like the unicorn farts that are burning down the planet. It just comes into existence. And we just print the money, and there's no problem with that. Well, no, we've all heard this before. When Paul he writes this, when Paul Krugman, very liberal economist, warns that your economic philosophy downplays the danger of government spending, it's time to reevaluate your life choices. So the thing that they've always told everybody in the past is, don't worry, it's money that we owe ourselves. Now they're saying, don't worry, we'll just print more paper. We can go the route that Venezuela did or Zimbabwe did, and you know we can get hyperinflation. They say that this is going to work because we have the petrodollar. Well, the petrodollar isn't necessarily going to last forever, especially if people catch on to the game. One of the reasons that they went to the petrodollar was because people caught on to the game that even though we supposedly had a gold-backed currency and that we were going to be the gold standard for everybody post-World War II, that after about 15 years, everybody said, they're just printing money. They don't have any gold to back this up. And they're going to get to the point where they say the same thing about this fiat currency. We'll be right back. Stay with us. Welcome back. Just one more comment about who's going to pay for this stuff. Again, when the government pays for something, it's got three ways to do it. Government does not create wealth. It transfers it. And it can do that by taxation. It can do it by borrowing money, which is going to be paid back with taxes and interest sometime in the future. Or it can do it with inflation. You know, but instead of paying all the money back, they just inflate the value away. Which is one of the key things that they've been doing. And so you've got economists who have been talking about this for a very long time. It's nothing new. This MMT is just a rhetorical device being used by Bernie Sanders' court jesters. That's really what economists are. They're politicians' court jesters. Of course, we have real court jesters now in late-night comedy, court jesters working for the Democrat Party. But they have fulfilled that point for quite some time. But we've had Ludwig von Mises, we've had Henry Hazlitt, we've had a lot of Austrian economists point this out. You know, you got that the government can't become insolvent like private individuals. The national government can't because it's printing that money. I mean, that certainly the states can. You've got New York, you've got Illinois, you've got California that are up to their neck in unsustainable debt that they've incurred for their pension programs. How are they, you know, they keep handing out big deals to the employees who work for the state government and the labor unions, just like they're now making promises to everybody. And they had no way to pay for it. And so now they're looking for ways to raise taxes. New York is looking for ways to raise taxes for transportation. They're going to put in both a big fare increase. They're not telling anybody how much the fare increase is going to be there for the subways. They got everybody upset because they were talking like 30% increase. And I said, well, we're going to put a whole bunch of things in there. We're going to raise the prices of your fares, yes, but then we're going to charge anybody coming into the city with a vehicle. We're going to charge them a congestion charge. This is what's being done in European cities to effectively ban automobiles from the cities. And so now it's also coming to America, these same schemes. And then they're going to roll in some pot taxes, they said, if it goes through. Now, this is these are the same people who, you know, we're going to tax the pot people, but yet you got in New York City a movement there, just like in North Carolina and some other places, where they want to drive the ability of people to put CBD products into drinks or into food. They want to ban that. So how are they going to, you know, raise the taxes for marijuana when they want to ban CBD? CBD doesn't even get people high. This is kind of like what AOC was doing with Amazon. We're going to soak the rich, but don't put any rich people in here. Of course, I don't agree with giving subsidies to big corporations. I never agreed with giving the money, subsidizing the richest man. Or I don't really care about the economics of it. A lot of people are attacking her and saying, but, you know, there's only, we're only giving them this much and we're going to get even more from them. Well, you could get more from a bigger tax base if you expanded your tax base by cutting your regulations and taxes and letting people climb up the ladder of success instead of sawing off those rungs by raising the taxes on everybody else to pay for this billionaire's business. Like I said before, we're talking about giving people, setting them up in business for a yogurt factory or for an NFL franchise or an NBA franchise or an Amazon warehouse. Stop subsidizing billionaires. Make them pay their own way. It's always the little guy that has to subsidize the billionaires. So yeah, I don't agree with it, but for all different reasons than AOC. She just doesn't like rich people. And she thinks that that money is already there and they should be handing it out as you know, free trinkets to all of her voters. Well, there isn't any money there to hand out to people. The money has to be created with businesses setting up, but we don't need to beg Amazon to create businesses. Let small businesses, medium-sized businesses, let them grow. Let people be able to pursue their dream and start a business without having to subsidize a billionaire in that way. But nevertheless, as they've talked about many times, if the government is truly honest, it will tell people what's going on here and that they're going to use inflation to do the job for a limited amount of time, but it's an expensive method, as von Mises pointed out, that socially disruptive should be avoided. But of course, that is our go-to way of financing all this stuff with inflation. They have shot more than 99.9% of the purchasing power of the dollar since the Federal Reserve was created. They've inflated it away. And when you look at all of this stuff and the fact that the Democrats are out there saying, it's all right, we can just print paper and you can borrow the money. Not a problem. When Robert McNamara, you know, the genius behind the Vietnam War, I mean that in all sarcasm, when he went to the World Bank, they said, well, you know, we've seen how Germany has been rebuilt with a lending, lend-lease program and so forth, and, you know, the Marshall Plan. So we're going to do that for third world countries. We're going to help you to expand the living standard for your people. So create a welfare state and start, you know, don't use this borrowed money from the World Bank to build infrastructure or to start developing resources or actually build an economy that can create wealth. Don't do that. Borrow money from us and hand it out in welfare programs. And people said, that's outrageous. That's immoral. You are rent seeking. You're trying to turn all these countries into renters. There's no way that if they borrow money from you and spend it on social welfare programs, creating a welfare state, that's not going to generate any money. They're not going to be able to pay you back. They're going to be turned into renters forever. Yeah, exactly. That's the plan. And that's exactly what the Democrats are doing right now, especially when they say, well, you're not going to have to pay for this. The Green New Deal, as I pointed out the other day, $93 trillion that cranked through the wish list that AOC put out there. Not thinking about how candid she was being, telling everybody what this was going to be. They did ran the numbers, $93 trillion. That would work out to $65,000 a household. Now, the median household earns $61,000 a year in 2017. So you're talking about 106% of what the median household earns every year. But don't worry, they'll just inflate it away. They've already inflated away 99.9% of the purchasing power of your dollar in the last 100 years. But they'll do more of that as they come through this, because they're just going to make you sharecroppers. Everything these people do, whether it is the smart cities or the takeover of transportation by making sure that they outlaw your private cars and you're going to be renting your transportation from them regardless of how you do it. You know, you can rent it from them. They'll control the subways or the buses or the light rail, or they will control the robocars along with their corporate partners, and then you can not just lease the car from them. You won't buy it anymore. It'll be too expensive, too uneconomical. So you can lease it from them, or you can lease it by the ride. Everything is about them owning everything and then leasing it to you. So you become like a sharecropper. You become a debt slave on their plantation. That's exactly what they want. They want tenant farmers who don't own anything. You work for them. You turn over pretty much everything that you make over to them. You load 16 tons, and what do you get? Another day older and deeper in debt. And St. Peter, don't call me because I can't come. I owe my soul to Google or to Uber or to the World Bank or to whichever corporation is favored by the Democrats and Republicans at any given time. That's it. You're going to work for the company store. They're going to own everything. They already own the public square, and we can't say anything when they steal our free speech. We'll be right back.
In a world of deceit, telling the truth is a revolutionary act. And now, your host, David Knight.
We're about a week away from the Marvel Universe being remade into a Marvel matriarchy with Captain Marvel. And as some people have put out, pushing back against her obvious hatred and sexism. As one person tweeted, Brie Larson says, white dudes kind of suck. And then they what some white dudes and others say, you're sort of ruining your upcoming movie for us. Then Rotten Tomatoes says, we must change our entire system so that nobody knows this. And that's exactly what they've done. Because she has been in everybody's face about the matriarchy. Because other people who are pretend superheroes, people like Mark Ruffalo, Don Cheadle, have written op-ed pieces talking about the only way that we're going to solve the problems of this planet and that the planet is going to survive is if we put all the women in charge. Men just can't do it. It's like, well, then shut up, because you're a man. Obviously, you know nothing, right? What are you talking about? Just shut up. But that's what Rotten Tomatoes is saying to anybody that has a problem with this. Following her comments, box office projections for Captain Marvel dropped about 28%, while Rotten Tomatoes' comments section blew up. And so Rotten Tomatoes trying to help, as they point out, Hollywood's sagging box office figures. I decide that they'll prop them up by just shutting down criticism. Doesn't that sound familiar? Isn't that what Clint Watts, the guy with the military-industrial complex, is saying? We got to silence the guns on the information war. We're losing the battle. Said it just like Hillary Clinton. So we got to silence the cannons. That means that we censor people on social media. Or even on movie review sites. And if you don't think that this is political, folks, you don't understand what movies are about. Movies are some of their most effective propaganda. To get you, they create these scenarios to make one type of group or something look like victims and the others look like heroes. Make one group of people look like stupid dunces. Create these obvious stereotypes. propagate hate, propagate their economic models, if you could call them that, propagate their environmentalism, all of this stuff. Zero Hedge points out, those who think that a movie will suck or who have a problem with something that was said, something controversial that was said by a star, have now been labeled trolls. You're obviously Russians or you're bots. And we're going to shut you down. And so they call it review bombing. Well, I mean, we could call it a hate campaign. I mean, can we hate a movie? Is that okay anymore? Can we not like movies? Oh, no. You will like the movies that they want to foist on you that sell their agenda. They said, we decided, this is Rotten Tomatoes, we decided the easiest thing to do and the most intelligent thing to do was simply to remove comments. There you go. And that's kind of, I guess, what you could say Facebook and YouTube and Twitter decided to do to InfoWars, right? That's what they decided to do to Tommy Robinson. And, of course, he was on with Alex Jones yesterday as he did an hour-long expose. He called it panodrama. It was undercover footage of BBC journalist John Sweeney making racist and classist statements, revealing how the BBC collaborated with a radical far left organization called Hope Not Hate, funded by George Soros, partly. They worked with that Soros organization to take Robinson down. And so he beat them to the punch. He did a documentary. He put it up on YouTube. He put it up on Facebook. BBC was accused in that documentary called Panodrama of bribery, blackmail, intimidation tactics against former Robinson employees to invent stories against the former leader of the English Defense League. He said, this is massive. This is Britain's leading investigative journalist documentary by the BBC that we pay for, creating, editing news in order to destroy my life. Those people in the UK have to pay for the BBC, kind of like we have to pay for NPR here. Panodrama is out, he said. Go to my Facebook page. It's pinned to the top. And then they took it down as soon as he did that. Took it down on Facebook. That's where we are. Kind of exactly what they did, they're doing with the reviews for Captain Marvel. Oh, we don't like that, so we just take it down. As Paul Watson pointed out, he said, Tommy Robinson is being banned by Facebook and Instagram. It was timed deliberately so he couldn't defend himself against a BBC hit piece. This is how they operate. But conservatives keep preaching a free market until we're silenced into oblivion. Absolutely right. Again, as I've said many times, you know, we look at the way that they push back against us. We look at what's going on with PayPal. Wall Street Journal, I couldn't believe this when I saw this. PayPal CEO grapples with fringe groups. The Wall Street Journal puts the PayPal CEO out there as the victim. Person who is trying to deplatform InfoWars, gab other people. This is the way they start out at the Wall Street Journal. Most of the roughly 21 million merchants that use PayPal Holdings Incorporated services to sell things over the internet are inoffensive types. Mom and pop shops on eBay's marketplace, big retailers like Target and Apple, you know, the good guys like Apple. But then there's InfoWars and Gab.com. Websites associated with far right-wing individuals and groups that have been accused of promoting hate speech. Well, I never had any of those accusations, Wall Street Journal. You have been involved in covering up Wall Street Journal for some of the biggest conspiracies around. You know, the financial conspiracy and rape of this country, the rape that we've experienced in the wars that you've stood by and pushed, the financial chicanery that you have backed from the Federal Reserve and other places. And they have the audacity to come out and say, well, you know, this poor PayPal CEO. PayPal has taken stances on social issues that have earned it a fair share of political enemies. Poor people. That's just their principal stances. And as a result, these poor people at PayPal are being sued by InfoWars. When you talk about these people and they come back and they say, well, you know, free market. And if you don't like it, create your own internet. Create your own social media. Create your own banking system. That's exactly what they're saying. Create your own banking system. As I said yesterday, if the banking system is regulated to keep them from ripping people off and stealing money, at least in theory, if we agree that we ought to have laws to keep banks from stealing your money, stealing your home, shouldn't we have laws to keep banks and other corporations from stealing your most precious God-given property, your rights, your liberties? And I'm talking about your rights coming from God. Not that you have a right to health care or something. You don't have a right to something that has to be provided by somebody else. You don't have a right to enslave other people, because that's essentially what this amounts to. You're either stealing from somebody right now, your neighbor, and that's the conceit that's behind all this. I've seen this so much in the people that I know from big government liberal states like New York. Oh, that's right. These other people, they're going to be the ones who are taxed to pay for my free stuff. And then they wind up living in poverty because it's just a dodge. There ain't going to be enough money from those people. They always shift this blame from one group to the other. But the bottom line is that we don't want to have the government working with corporations to take away our stuff. That's exactly what these people are sanctioning. It just happened to Jorge Ramos, and I think most people could understand that that wasn't something that you want to have happen. You know, they stole his videos, they stole his work, they deported Jorge Ramos because he didn't like the content. Maduro didn't like the comment, so he was almost about ready to cry. They took my I worked for a couple of days, and they destroyed that. Well, try a few years, Jorge. Try a couple of decades of content that InfoWars had taken down. As we look at the case of them censoring Mafic Media, because they had they were partly owned by an RT subsidiary, as Oriental Review is pointing out on Zero Hedge. If you're going to have rules, they should be universally applied. You shouldn't discriminate against anyone in particular, which wasn't the case. And you should be informed about that. Otherwise, it is an InfoWar operation. That's exactly what it is. Same type of strategy they used against InfoWars is part of their war against information and free speech. We'll be right back. Stay with us. In Soviet Russia, Pravda was one of the two press organizations they had. Pravda, translated, meant truth. Izvestia meant news. And of course, even though they only had two news organizations, they knew because of government control, they knew, and the saying was, there is no truth in Pravda, there is no news in Izvestia. They were not fooled. And we're not fooled. A recent poll conducted by the School of Columbia School of Journalism, actually reported this. It was a poll by Reuters. They looked at, they talked to 4,200 Americans, and they said the media ranked dead last in a list of trustworthy institutions behind Congress, behind the military, behind the executive branch, behind the president. 60% of respondents said that they believed that journalists paid their sources. 41% of them said they're not likely to believe a story if it's got anonymous sources, because, you know, the only thing worse than paying your sources is to just make it up, which is what we see being done all the time with CNN, with Washington Post. CNN is being accused of colluding with Democrats during the Bernie Sanders town hall. I mean, they did it. They colluded against Bernie during the primaries for Hillary Clinton, giving her answers to the town hall questions that they would have and so forth. But as Don Jr., Donald Trump Jr. pointed out, and he's talked about how the attacks against him and his family are really Stalin-esque. They are. And I've said that many times. Bring me the man, I'll find the crime. These are investigations of people, not of crimes. There is no crime there. There is no crime of collusion. They keep talking about that. There is no collusion there. They have tried to come after people, and in the process of doing that, they have created process crimes. Well, I think that you told me slightly different versions about something that absolutely is not relevant to anything whatsoever. You know, you could ask them what time of day it was. You know, well, you told me the time of day was this when it was actually 5 minutes earlier or later. So now we're going to get you for lying to an FBI agent or somebody from the Department of Justice. This is what Donald Trump Jr. had to say about the alliance between the big tech companies and the activist left. He says prevents people from being heard.
Do you think they understand the threat of woke capitalism, the alliance between the activist left and big business that is shutting down speech?
You know, I think they're starting to get it. I think they're starting to see it. I mean, that's why I've tried to utilize my platform. I did an op-ed in Real Clear Politics the other day because I see it from so many real Americans, just guys that are Second Amendment accounts, people that follow me, like my politics, whatever it is. And they're reaching out to me when I made a big deal of this, saying, wow, it's happening to me, too. But I have a platform to actually do something about it. There are guys. Kevin McCarthy's been pretty vocal about it. But the reality is that nothing has changed. I put up an Instagram post 2 weeks ago about the Smollett thing because, you know, I had the gall to be a little bit cynical about the entire ridiculous situation that was laid out. And Instagram just deleted it. I sort of responded in my normal fashion, rather aggressively, saying, what's wrong with this? Here's the problem, yada, yada. And I got inundated, Tucker. Hundreds of people sending me DMs. Don, you know, my account was shut down because I tried liking one of your tweets, or I tried liking one of your father's Instagram posts that was like him and his grandchildren. Nothing even controversial. And time and time again, I've had to follow you, Don, three times in the last week because they keep unfollowing you. It's really sad, and it's happening. And the excuse that, well, it's spam-like behavior. No, spam-like behavior is not making Instagram unfollow people who want to follow my content and other conservatives.
Yeah, exactly. I've had people tell me that as well. I don't see your stuff anymore. They keep unfollowing, taking my account and having it unfollow your account. Same thing they told Donald Trump Jr. It's a thing. As I said, it's not social media. It's a tool of social control. Twitter and Facebook are not social media. Google is not a search engine. They are tools of control. They were designed that way decades ago by DARPA, by J.C.R. Licklider, a psychologist who was working for DARPA. The internet, the intergalactic computer network is what they, where they came up with internet. And then when it became technologically feasible in the late 1990s, you had all these different people from the deep state, from the police surveillance state, from the NSA, the CIA, from DARPA, the Pentagon. They all started funding these corporations that now have got control of the internet. And we're told to just back, oh, God, so many conservatives and libertarians is like, they're just successful companies. You know, they just built a better lemonade stand. So leave them alone. You know, they earned that. No, they didn't earn that. They were set up in that. Here's an example of what this looks like on a literal basis on the street. In Seattle, an independent journalist goes to Seattle, Washington, to film a bunch of Antifa's protesting the First Amendment, essentially. That's why I say. They say that they're anti-fascist, but they're anti-FA. They're anti-First Amendment. They don't want your free speech. So he goes there to film the Antifa people. They had conservative journalist Salim Juma went to the Washington University campus in Seattle to film the Antifa protest. It featured black bloc protesters holding signs reading Fight Capitalism, Blue Lives Murder, Bigots Out, and of course the usual sprinkling of hammers and sickles because they're communists. And he had a police officer come up to him and tell him to stop filming because if he's filming these communist people out there with their masks and their hammers and sickles threatening people, he says that might trigger them. They might get violent. So you're not allowed to do this. And the guy says, see, the thing is here, officer, that we're actually legally allowed to come to these protests and ask questions. And he said that to him several times. He says, if I'm standing here and five or six of them come and surround me, I think they're the ones who are being the aggressors here, he said to the officer, who wouldn't respond to him. And he said, it is not illegal to ask questions, officer. We do have a right to ask questions. No, you don't. Not in America anymore, because if you ask questions, whether you're doing it on the street, if you're doing it on the street, you might trigger these people, right? If you do it on social media, if you ask questions of the official government story, you know, this Russian, Russiagate conspiracy theory, the red herring that Hillary Clinton put out there. If you ask questions about that, you're a conspiracy theorist. If you question the official narrative from the government and the mainstream press and the Democrat Party, you are the conspiracy theorist, even though they've got a conspiracy theory that's been debunked now for over 2 years, almost 3 years. We're the conspiracy theorist if we question their conspiracy theory. They're not conspiracy theorists. They're always true. And if you question them, that very act of questioning them is provocative and hateful. These are the rules under which they rule us. And we've got to say they're not going to do it. And we have to say, just like, you know, when we look at the fraud that they put out there for abortion, when they say it's about privacy, where do they allow us to have privacy anywhere in life except for that? Kamala Harris, as Attorney General of California, went after the Center for Medical Progress, who was doing the undercover investigation, showing Planned Parenthood people negotiating to provide body parts on demand. And when they took those pictures, Kamala Harris, as Attorney General, said, you violated their privacy. If you got people who are murdering babies, they can do that because there's a right to privacy. If they are conspiring to procure body parts and you expose that by filming them, you have violated their privacy again. Of course. Of course, it's always privacy, except when it's your privacy. Except when you want to have control over the education or the health of your child. Then they're going to say, you're going to give them the vaccines that we tell you on our schedule. We tell you that you're going to give 3 dozen vaccine shots to a kid in a short period of time. You'll do it. Or there'll be recriminations against no privacy, no choice, and any of that. You know, when we look at this vote against the Born Alive Amendment, remember that it was just, it wasn't even a month ago, January the 31st, the uproar about the Democrat governor, Ralph Northam, as they pointed out in Daily Wire at the time, his stunning defense of letting born alive infants die if the mother doesn't want to save it. The moderate governor's defenders on the left are pushing a claim about late-term abortions. When we talk about third trimester abortions, they said, these are done with the consent of the mother, and I think so, as they pointed out, as Ralph Northam said, if the mother's in labor, I can tell you exactly what happened. The infant would be delivered, the infant would be kept comfortable, be resuscitated if need be, and then we'd decide if we're going to kill it. And this is what they just voted for. Infants dead on arrival. Or infants that aren't dead on arrival, we can kill them after they arrive, is really what it's about. They voted against the infants born alive. But, of course, the media has covered this up. He came back and said, my comments are being mischaracterized. Kathy Tran, who had introduced the bill, said, it's being mischaracterized. Then they said, well, the right is editing this and twisting this. So they put it up for a vote. And they doubled down and said, yeah, that's right. We'll kill babies after they're born. After they survive an attempted abortion, we'll kill them. There's no question about the health of the mother at that point. They're just murderers. That's the Democrat Party. Thanks for listening. That's our program for today.